Thought leader and influencer, this is Luba Mayegiso and the Africa Report.
Luba, very good morning. How are you?
I am looking at the results coming out of the US and I'm feeling that you're probably trying to run away from this discussion. I know you're rooting for Biden.
Me? Under absolutely no circumstances.
It's fine, Howard. We won't hold you to it today.
No, I'm certainly not rooting for Biden. I find Biden to be a veneer of a decent person. I think every now and then you see a shift and you actually see what is below that. And I don't think it's good. I don't think it's what is good. I do have real concerns about Donald Trump in terms of his morality, the way he speaks, and that type of issue. But certainly, I think he's a far better choice than.
You know what's funny though?
Mm.
Let me throw you a curveball, because a lot of people who don't like Trump will talk about masculinity, sexism, how he addresses people and all of those issues. And the funny thing is that his popularity in Africa is probably not matched by that. So if you speak to people who are, let's say, in politics, let's say in our country, for instance, many of them will lean towards the Democrats and Biden, and people will tell you all the stereotypical things why Trump is so bad. You know, for instance, the comments he made about the asshole countries of Africa and all of those places. But if you look at the evangelicals in Africa, even in countries like Nigeria that he was now supposedly, you know, have dismissed quite badly, he's very popular. He's incredibly popular. So if you look at the evangelical Christian, you know, movement in Africa, he has incredible support, and Biden not. And it's really around policies. So you'll find that people are less concerned about how articulate he is, how well he expresses himself, and who he offends. And they'll say on issues, say, for instance, like protecting the unborn child against, you know, defunding abortion, on human sexuality, he has a stance that resonates with them. And that's what really matters.
It's so interesting that he's almost this enigma, because on paper, we should really hate this guy, shouldn't we, in many ways? But yet somehow we don't.
How would I put that sometimes to Democrats and Republicans? I mean, even going back to when I started paying attention to US politics with George Bush, Republicans tend to be clear about their policies. You may not like the policies. So if you ask, let's say, for instance, George Bush back in his days on war and terror, he would finger certain countries. Same with Trump. Trump will tell you we have to fight terror. He'll tell you where it comes from. Now, some people may say that's racist. You're picking certain countries, but you're often very clear about what Republicans, how they see the world. Whereas Democrats tend to have a lot of nuances, and you're never quite sure where they really stand on something.
Because there's a lot of double speak. There's a lot of double speak. And what I find very difficult is double speak. I don't understand it. I find it like noise pollution. You just need to move it away so that you can hear what somebody's saying. And we saw that under Obama. He was the master of double speak, wasn't he?
The problem is you're trying to cater to a very wide audience with very different interests, and you have to be everything to everybody, and in the end you end up almost being nothing. So you champion this, you champion that, and then you end up being conflicted. And for me, when I look at it from Africa, there's a fascination, for instance, in some quarters with with Democrats, especially after Obama, the first African American president. So there was a lot of mileage to got in support purely based because who he was. I mean, I still see people posting now about him, let's say, playing basketball, and they say, look, the man's got swagger. No denying he was great at oratory skills and everything. But there was a fascination with him being an African American, and you're seeing that a lot happening now with the vice president, his nominee, where people are rallying around her, not based on what necessarily she's done, but what she represents. But if truth be told, if you look at Africa and you say, well, I mean, you can be brutal and say Obama may have paid a visit to Africa, and Trump hasn't made any visit to state visit to Africa. Mm-hmm. His wife has. But at the end of the day, I would then say, so what does that matter? Does it translate to business, to more funding? I don't think so. America, I think, no matter who wins the elections, has a reasonably steady policy towards Africa. I mean, you can go back to the apartheid days where they supported certain countries who were pro-Western, anti-the Soviets, and America's interests are fairly, you know, it's about security, their war and terror. It's about trade, and it's about what they view as their version of democracy. And America's interests don't really change much. And I know a lot of people are rooting for Biden to win, but even if you go back to Obama and Trump, you know, the real change, I think, between the two administrations was around issues where, you know, parenthood, around healthcare issues, and maybe the WHO, where people might say, well, if Trump defunds the WHO, that would have an adverse effect on African countries who rely on that from a healthcare point of view. But largely, other than that, there hasn't been a huge difference between the two. I mean, going back, if you look at AGOA, it goes back to the Bush days. So there hasn't been that difference. But I want to take you back out and say, When George Bush, Jr. ran for elections, a lot of people didn't like him, didn't like his views. Mm. But if you listen to evangelical Americans, a lot of people in Africa, they said, our concern, is around, you know, for lack of a better word, godly principles, Christian values. Mm. So it doesn't matter if the man messes up on 6 million things and he gets the war on terror completely wrong in Iraq and Afghanistan or wherever else, as long as he gets these issues right. And I think that's the issue, is for politicians, it might be something else. If you take the traditional church, they certainly wouldn't like Trump. But if you take the evangelicals, they would love him to bits. And it's around how do you live your life and what do you consider most important? And I think that's how he's viewed. It hasn't helped, obviously, for, you know, that the Democrats traditionally will pull in the megastars, the Beyonces of this world, the movie stars, Hollywood. And a lot of younger people, Hollywood, a lot of younger people will gravitate there because if Beyonce endorses somebody, then he must be good. You know, this is where I go. Not necessarily based on any sound policies, but it's almost like a herd mentality. What has been interesting, though, is that Trump has been able to rally some rappers and hip hop guys. I think there was 50 Cent, there was Lil John. So he has been able to pull an interesting number of people, you know, to come into his camp. And I would view it, I would say to you, probably the younger generation, the born frees, would lean towards Joe Biden, and the older generation would stick with the Republicans. And then, of course, depending on how much of a difference faith makes to your daily life. If it's an accessory, then you'll probably lean Democrat. But if your faith determines how you live your life, you're probably likely to go with Trump.
Which makes sense, but if you look at the map of America, because the so-called Bible Belt and those areas have definitely are very solidly Republican.
Yes, absolutely. So if you look at what Trump has been doing in the Middle East and brokering the peace between Israel and various countries, I mean, that resonates exceptionally well with the evangelical community. And for them, they see as that is what Trump is there for. So what he gets wrong in his administration is immaterial to what he gets right. It's how important that issue is versus the ones that some people consider important. I mean, I think we have to be fair and say America will always play a role in Africa in one way or the other. And I think American influence is very hard to measure. There's the direct aid that you get from the U.S. government. Then there's many agencies. So if you go to countries like Lesotho, Swaziland, and all over sub-Saharan Africa, there are many agencies. You know, it might be the Bill Gates, it might be the Bill Clinton Foundation, for instance, that's working even in this country on healthcare. So America has many tentacles and many ways to get involved. And those are not necessarily dependent on the administration because a lot of them are privately funded. But you know, what you've got to remember with America is that private and public is a very thin line. So you might find the Bill Gates Foundation or the Clinton Foundation operating here, and Clinton might have been a Democrat, but the current U.S. administration would still support those initiatives around the continent. So for me, I think where some people who look at it economically say there might be a difference if Biden wins, they believe that China has been Trump has been very aggressive in dealing with China, and primarily through trade tariffs and putting barriers, and therefore the Chinese economy has suffered, and by implication, its purchase of raw materials from Africa has been hampered. So if Biden comes on scene, he might approach things differently, which might lead to more growth in the Chinese economy, which then might lead to an increased appetite for our raw materials. But that leads us, Howard, to another question, whether or not we do want to be pillaged by China in the first place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So therefore, so are you saying that whether we like it or not, directly or indirectly, this election in the United States matters?
It matters. It matters tremendously. And, you know, I'm not sure that we as African countries engage with the U.S. and world bodies as best as we can. I've seen it now, for instance, with this candidate that we've put up to the UN. I think African countries need to be able to act as a bloc. We probably, you know, not in terms of necessarily landmass, but in terms of number of countries, 50-odd countries, we're the biggest bloc in the world. Yet we are not able to stand together. So if Africa was able to present a united front on many issues around trade, around defense, and so forth, we would be able to probably get better concessions out of the EU and out of the US. But unfortunately, we tend to operate very, very in silos. So you'll find there's a West African contingent, you know, there'll be an East African one, there'll be a Francophone grouping, and then, you know, us in the SADC. Somehow, as an AU, we're not able to stand and deal with America and look at cross-border trade and say what's good for us as a continent.
Mm. I'm not even sure the AU can deal with Africa.
Well, that's true, but that's a sad reality. Mm. That's a sad reality, because if we could get to that. But you know what, for me, has been interesting, though, is American elections will always remain a source of huge fascination. I was quite intrigued to see that in some countries they've started to mirror the presidential debates. I think 2013 that happened in Kenya with the opposition were calling for that. So there are countries that look at it with the hope that they can mimic some of the ways the Americans go about their elections and how they go about their administration. Obama, I remember when he was here, he made a plea about leaders not staying beyond their second term, but, you know, met with thunderous applause, but in reality, you know, that hasn't gained any traction at all. How are you predicting things today, Howard?
Well, it's certainly leaning towards a Trump victory. We spoke to a couple of experts earlier as well, and it seems that once again, the polling companies got it completely wrong.
Do you think he's changed over the 4 years?
I do, actually, because, in fact, I think he's changed tremendously. And, in fact, yes, for the better. In fact, what I did was, you know, I do body language analysis for Russia Today sometimes primarily on these political type of things. And, when I compare his first meeting with Putin and his meeting with Kim Jong-un and his body language there, incredibly unsophisticated, uncontrolled, you could read everything off all of his gestures versus when I analyzed him on the Biden-Trump debate, I saw a very, very different person. I actually saw a very presidential person. What I saw from Joe Biden was exactly the opposite. And that's when I really made up my mind that Joe Biden just wasn't the person for me. Not that I have any say in this, but that's what I keep repeating about this veneer, because I think he shows respectability. He's very well trained. He's been in politics for nearly 50 years, and so he's got the moves, but he doesn't hold it together very well. What I saw from Trump, interestingly enough, even in the first debate, which was a horror for both of them, was somebody who is very much in control of his environment. He was much more confident, much more dominant, and not necessarily in an aggressive way as he has been in the past. So yes, I see a tremendous amount of growth with Donald Trump, and I actually believe that even haters of Donald Trump will see that you won't see the same you know, tearing of clothes and ashes on their head should he win this election. But I mean, that's just
what worries me, though. Mm. But what worries me, though, is, I mean, looking at the news yesterday where they were saying you know, the police force in New York is already primed, and the National Guard, I mean, the army in some states, there is almost a feeling that there may be a refusal to accept the outcome from both camps. And I certainly know when I speak to the younger people around my house that they just can't imagine Biden losing at all. It's almost an impossibility, something that people just will refuse to accept. And that, you know, I think we have to see how that pans out.
The reality is that a lot of this civil unrest has come from the Democrats. So I'm not sure that we have any basis to say that the Republicans won't accept the result. I know that that's just what we say. Donald Trump will never leave the White House. We have no basis on which to say that.
Let me ask you a question for a change. Do you not think a public feels more comfortable with a leader they can read? So in as much as Trump may have his faults
in
speaking too quickly and not perhaps thinking things through, you know, thoroughly, he tends to speak what is in his heart. So like it or not, at least you know, whereas a seasoned politician might be able to massage what he says to you and deceive you in the process.
Yes, because that's exactly what it is. You don't, what you see is what you get with Donald Trump. You can choose to like it or not like it, but you know what you're getting. I don't know what we are getting with Biden. I have no idea what he even stands for. We have no idea because he is so chameleonic politically.
I think the sadness for me was watching the debates and the period leading up to this was it almost became very similar to our own domestic politics where parties, especially the Democrats, were less clear about what they were offering than they were of criticizing the other side, where I would say, for instance, I'll see that a lot in the DA where they will criticize ANC policies. Whereas you're saying, you know, if you're wanting to win votes, it's high time that you actually articulate what you believe in, what you stand for and what you want to do. It's easy to be negative, but at the end of the day, you know, I have to support you based on something that I can believe in. It's fairly easy to wake up and find fault with policy, with corruption, to find fault with so many things.
Absolutely.
So, I think we'll be fascinated, and I think that's my take, Howard, is that largely I would say Africa, whichever way it pans out for us. I mean, if you look at the last 20, 30 years, there hasn't been that major a shift. And I think African countries are very interesting. So a lot of them will be very quick to denounce the US, its authoritarian approach to conflict and democracy. But many of them will cooperate privately. I mean, if you recall, we had a case just up the road from you at Vatakloof Airport Base of rendition, where somebody was taken and flown to the Middle East. And you always find that there will almost be a public approach where some countries will denounce the US, its policies, but privately, a lot of them will be quite happy to work. I mean, if you look at the military presence of the US Army in Africa, it's quite large. Outside of Europe, it's probably the second biggest. And the number of, you know, whether it's advising in so many things in conflicts. So you tend to find that, you know, politics are very nuanced. Publicly, many countries will be very anti the US, but I think we do need the US a lot more than we probably admit. If you were to ask me, I would say if you look at the relationship we have with the US and China, China has benefited in the last couple of years tremendously from US taking a backseat in so many ways. But the relationship with China tends to be one way traffic.
Absolutely.
In terms of what
Absolutely.
They aggressively need. And to me, I think we need to get closer to the US to try and balance that so that we're not held at ransom, where literally 100%. It's, I'll build this because I need that.
Luba, I do need to leave it there. Unfortunately, fascinating conversation. It is 8:57. Gail wants to know, has Melania's body language changed? Haven't heard anything about her having her and another term. Actually, I don't think her body language has changed much. But maybe it has in the sense that there's been stages where I thought that she absolutely detested her husband over the last while. I've seen signs that things are just a little bit better